I hope you can see this fairly well. So today's sermon, we're wrapping up the last of the Missional Life series. And we've taken it on quite a journey. We've explored ministry at the workplace. We talked about the ministry of reconciliation, about building bridges between peoples that are estranged, the people that aren't us, the people not like us. We talked about forgiving and the importance of that. We talked about all kinds of things this week. In fact, Don did a great job summarizing our series so far last week. So go back, listen to Don's sermon last week if you haven't heard it. One of the key points I want to resonate out of that is a life lived in missions. He said one of the cores of it is, one of the cores of a life lived in missions, a missional life, springs out of who you are, not what you do. It's a lifestyle. It's an identity issue. And in a very real sense, then, you are God's gift to the earth. You are God's gift to the world. And you being you in God's kingdom is the most powerful ministry you'll ever know. So today we summarize, and we're going to kind of circle back. I'm going to try to tie all these loose ends together a little bit, and I'm going to do it with one simple phrase: to be told. We are natural-born storytellers. Movies, novels, music, TED Talks, comic books, podcasts, campfire stories. It doesn't matter how you get them. History or fantasy, scandal or Marvel, gossip or fact, we love a good story, and we crave for a good one to be told. And why not? Life can be exciting. It is often a roller coaster ride of highs and lows, joys and sorrows, pleasure and pain. And in the midst of it, regardless of the journey, the single greatest struggle that unites all of humanity is the pursuit of meaning or purpose. Everyone struggles with that. On a visceral level, we crave a narrative that makes sense of our lives with all of its mess. We are looking to make sense of the chaos and the beauty that is waking up, living, and going to bed. We are looking for our story to be told. Even if it's just to those around us, to our neighbors and families and friends, what we crave the most, what we individually crave the most, is to be heard, to be acknowledged, and to be understood. And the only way to accomplish that is for our story to be told. So, we're going to start off on a fun foot. Right now, I want you to turn to the person next to you, and I want you to share with them a time when uncomfortable change led to immense personal growth. A time when you went through a change that was just painful, but it led to immense personal growth. Go ahead. I'll give you a couple minutes each. You in now. The Apostle Paul, after he converted, he spent several years kind of in hiding out of the limelight. He was a persecutor of the Christians, and then he goes into this almost a season of learning and growing. And out of that, he goes out and he starts spreading the news about Jesus, whereas the people that were with him before are now trying to kill him. So Paul has a hard go, and Paul arrives in Athens at one point, and he's teaching about Jesus and the resurrection in the synagogue, and he's brought to this place called the Areopagus, or Ares Opagus, the hill of Mars, the hill of the god of Ares, which we call Mars Hill in English, by people that heard him talking about Jesus and the resurrection. And they figure, you know what, this is great stuff. Everybody should hear this. So they take him up to Mars Hill, where all the philosophers and teachers and religious people debate and discuss things. So there he is. So our scripture today picks up shortly after this little, it starts in verse 22. So Paul, standing in the midst of the Areopagus, says, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you are very religious." And you might even use the word spiritual in today's common language. You're very spiritual people. "For as I was passing along, I observed the objects of your worship, and I found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you." We pick up in today's text. Paul launches in. He says, "The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of humanity to live on all of the earth, having determined periods and boundaries of their dwelling, that they," why? "That they should seek God and perhaps feel their way towards him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. In him we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, 'For we are indeed his offspring.' Being then God's offspring, we ought to not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of people. The times of ignorance God overlooked, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent, because he has fixed a day on which he'll judge the world in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed. And of this he has given assurance to everyone by raising that man from the dead." So from this text, we can draw out three things. There's so much packed into this text. It's probably one of the most quoted texts when we're talking about missional life. Probably one of the most quoted texts ever. It's one of the go-tos. So I'm going to highlight three things that we're going to pull from the text today. Know the story, know their story, find your place in the story. Sound pretty simple? Okay, so know the story. See, Paul understood the gospel, that time in silence, that time in learning, that time in quiet, in retreat. Paul learned to understand the gospel, God's original intent and eternal intent for the people of God, whoever they are. He learned it so well that he could explain this story to anybody, no matter where he was, no matter what he was doing. Middle of a shipwreck, here it is. Having coffee at the Starbucks, there it is. There's nothing that Paul couldn't go into his context and immediately be able to say, "Oh, here's what it looks like for you." He was a master of understanding God's intent. In fact, we see that in here, because Paul, in that, 12 verses? Not even 12 verses. He summarizes the entire biblical narrative from the beginning to the resurrection. Everything biblical up to that point, he had already summarized in less than 12 verses. So he knew the story. Elsewhere in Colossians chapter 1, verse 16, Paul reflects again his flexibility in explaining this. He phrases it differently. He says, "For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things that have been created, all things have been created through him and for him." Now, just in case you're wondering about the visible and invisible, what he means by invisible isn't like those mystical horses that you don't see, or those gremlins that steal your left sock. Why always the left sock? I don't get it. Well, my socks never match. That's why they keep stealing. Okay, if you ever find a gremlin that's been taking my socks and you don't see them, let me know so that I cannot see them too. No, the whole point of the visible and the invisible is that love, which is not visible, reason, which is not visible, math, which is not visible, these are non-seeable things. God created these. That's a mind blow. God created love. God created math. Scientists struggled to discover the unseen that God generously apportioned the universe. So Paul knew the story. He knew how to articulate it. He knew how to understand it. He knew how to tell the story of God to people that didn't understand it. But in order to do that, you have to be able to do one other thing, and that's the second thing. Know their story. See, Paul was a man who knew, in the first case, how to listen to God, to hear the God who speaks. Second, Paul learned other people's stories. Paul didn't just listen to God, he listened to his neighbors. He listened to the world around him. He listened to their story, what got them where they are, what happened in their lives. And in doing that, he studied his neighbors, and he came out after spending his time listening and paying attention and looking for God in their lives. He comes out with these two quotes from their philosophers. He says, "In him we live and move and have our being." This is a reference from the Critica by Epimenides, which is a Greek philosopher from about 300 BC. He was kind of like the layman's philosopher. Everyone loved quoting him. And so Paul says, guys, this God that I know, this unknown God that you don't even know how to worship, in him we live and move and have our being. And then he quotes the hymn to Zeus by Aratus. We are his offspring. Now in that context, the hymn to Zeus is referring to we are his, Zeus's offspring. But Paul takes that and he goes, yeah, close. It's the right idea. You just got the wrong father. Right? And that's one of the brilliances, is when we reinterpret some of other people's story, it can bring life to them. And so Paul came to his third point, knowing the story of God, knowing their story, then he finds his place in their story. Find your place in the story. And so Paul says, I'm here to tell you about this God that you don't know. Let me tell you from your own understanding. And he opens their eyes to the place of God in their life. This God that is beyond their understanding, beyond their culture, he is able to articulate and explain it. And then, you know, there's two responses in Mars Hill to Paul's teaching. One group said, wow, it's fascinating. Can we talk about that some more? And Paul would have none of it. He's like, no. You're spinning your wheels, just talking theory. The other group that responded said, wow, I got to know this God. You know, part of finding your place in their story is knowing when to invest and when to walk. When to just be a good neighbor and when to engage their story and see the response. This is part of what Jesus talked about, casting pearls before swine. He said, don't give people that aren't going to appreciate it your most precious thing. If the gospel is your most precious thing, do you force that on your neighbor that has no interest in Jesus? I hope not. Because until they see Jesus in you, they're not going to want to hear Jesus from you. Right? I'm going to say it again. Until they see Jesus in you, they're not going to want to hear about Jesus from you. So if we're not making the story of God part of our story, how do we hope to put it into their story? I've said it a few times. What you win them with is what you win them to. So Paul at Mars Hill, when he says, hey guys, let me tell you about Jesus and the resurrection. And they go, great, that sounds really fascinating. Tell us more about that. I'd like to. So, what do you mean by resurrection? Can we talk about that in more? You know, that's a neat philosophy. Paul's like, I'm not trying to win you to a philosophy. I'm not trying to win you to a theory about the universe. I'm winning you to a person. I'm winning you to a relationship. I'm bringing you into a story. And so Paul, over and over again, 1 Timothy chapter 1, Paul talks about how he came into his story with God. 1 Timothy 1, I'm not going to quote it, we're short on time. Ephesians chapter 2, he says, "We are God's handiwork, created in Christ to do good work, which God prepared in advance for us." Romans 8:28, "We know that all things work together for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purposes." Acts 20, Paul himself reports, he says, "I do not consider my life of any value is dear to myself, so that I may finish the course, the race, and the ministry which I receive from Jesus to testify clearly to the gospel of grace of God." And then one of my favorite verses of all times, the transition in Romans from understanding to doing. Paul says, "For from him and through him and to him all things, to him be the glory forever. Therefore," that's a powerful word, "therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in light of God's mercies, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. This is your spiritual," or in other translations, "your reasonable or obvious conclusioned act of worship. Don't be transformed by the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Don't let the stories of the world define your future. Let the story of God define your future." That's what Paul's getting at. See, so the biblical characters, it's interesting when we think about it in this way, because when we look at the biblical characters' lives, the story of David, the story of Abraham, the story of Joseph, they all had serious struggles. They all had serious pains, these uncomfortable moments from which great life and growth sprang. With Abraham, it was the desiring of a son versus God's promises. With Joseph, it was dealing with his brothers and being forgiving or seeking vengeance. With Moses, it was being caught between his blood family and his adoptive family. With David, he was torn between public opinion and what he wants. With Peter, he was torn between what sounds good and what's true. But I'm going to submit to you a different way of reading the scriptures. That maybe Abraham's life wasn't really about Abraham. That maybe David's life wasn't really about David. That Peter's life wasn't really about Peter. He may have been the central character in the story, but guess who the story's really about? It's about God. Abraham's story tells us volumes about the character and identity and heart of God. David's story tells us volumes about the character and identity of heart of God. Peter's story tells us volumes about the identity and character and love of Jesus. When we recognize that their stories are not about them, but are actually about God to communicate who he is to us, then I have to ask you the next most obvious question that you probably don't want to hear. What if your story is actually not about you? What if your story, your life is actually not about you? I mean, the rest of the universe gets it. You're not the most important part of the story. Everyone gets it but you. But your story is actually about God and his character and his faithfulness and what he can do through your story. So I'm going to break for 2 minutes here. I have a quick word about the AGM. We have a very clear picture of what our heart is. And there are some things that when we talk about our identity, these are the places where, in these contexts, that we meet others in our church. The top three are services, small groups, potlucks. Those are the top three. These are our strengths. And if you look at this picture, this is what we're great at. According to what you have said 3 years ago, this is what we're great at. And you know, of all these things, all the big words, You notice how none of them are ministries? They're identity issues. They're part of our story, what it means to be who we are. In fact, buried in here, you can see in the bottom there, take a break and discipleship on the far side. And on this one, it's huge. What we do, take a break, is huge. So why the disconnect? Women's programs, a colossal amount. 92% of us said we give a priority to women's ministries. This is a picture of church on mission with a clear focus. This is what it looks like. When you ask people, 92% of people say, yes, we're in. This is what it looks like. You want to know what confusion looks like? We have an explicit discipleship program for helping people grow in the faith. It's all over the map. There's no consensus. When we ask people, what is the most important elements of life that impact your spiritual growth? Our top three are preaching, singing, small groups. So if those are our top three for spiritual growth, where should we be innovating the most? In those top three, right? If those are the three where God's going to meet you the most, we should be innovating there the most, right? I mean, you'd think. Our indications is we innovate the most in outreach, missions, and programs. A little bit of a disconnect. We're going to talk a little bit about that with our AGM. We're going to talk a little bit about it next week at Pine Grove 101 with Les. But the reality is behind all this, because we people, we church, are not perfect. We're a bit of a mess. We're in process. What we come back to is that we have this clear sense of belonging. 92% of us either agree or strongly agree that we have a clear sense of belonging. This church, if we can summarize it, is where you belong. You come here to belong, to participate, to share. And as we grow as a church, we're going to grow in some of these areas. And we're going to set our future on setting sights on these. But the reality is that we come back to our core. That we come back to our core, that we are a people who have a story that needs to be told. We are a people, again, though, he knew the story, he listened to their story, and he found his story and theirs where they connected. We are a people that need not only to tell our stories, but we need to be a people that listen. Because as you listen to other people's story, what does that do in them? I don't know if you've noticed. When you listen to someone and you show interest in their story, they get interested in yours. Interested people are interesting. Interested people are interesting. The most potent way to connect your story to someone else's is to be curious. Our lives are about him. They're part of a story that is yet to be told fully. We are participants in God's story, but it doesn't stop there. You know what's so great about being part of God's story? We become participants in his promise. His will, his victory, his character, his spirit, even his very nature. We get to participate in who God is. We become a part of the greatest story to be told. And so from there, we have to focus our hearts and minds on listening to the God who speaks. We need to be prepared to step into this journey of God's, this story of God that spans millennia, that touches countless lives, from the hyper-intellectual to the starving person on the street, from the well-connected to the alone, from the rich to the poor. And so I want to close reminding us, know the story, know your story, know their story, find your place in the story. And to summarize, we're just going to close with this video that I think does a great job. It's very inspirational. I want you to join with me in it.
God of creation, there at the start, before the beginning of time. With no point of reference, you spoke to the dark and fleshed out the wonder of life. And as you speak, 100 billion galaxies are born in the vapor of your breath. The planets form, and if the stars were made to worship so light, I can see your heart in everything you make. Every burning star, signal, fire, grace. And if creation sings your praises, so will I. God of your promise, you don't speak in vain, no syllable empty or void. For once you have spoken, all nature and science follow the sound of your voice. As you speak, 100 billion creatures catch your breath, evolving in pursuit of what you said. And if it all reveals your nature so alive, I can see your heart in it. Every painted sky, a canvas of your grace. And if creation still obeys you, so will I. So will I. So. To die. And as you speak, 100 billion fairies disappear. Well, you lost your life so I can find it here. And if you left the grave behind you so alive, I can see your heart and everything you've done. Every part designed in a work of art called love. If you gladly chose surrender, so will I. I can see your heart in a billion different ways. Every precious one, a child you died to save. You gave your life to love them so alive. Like you would again 100 billion times. But what measure could amount to your desire? You're the one who never leaves the one behind.
So without apology or delay, we're going to go straight into a short time of prayer.